Good evening. My name is Barbara, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 27th, 1998. I have a home group, Friday night, TGIS, thank goodness I'm sober, women's meeting. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor others. I'm very proud of Lisa. She has come a long way in this year. It hasn't been an easy year for her. But no matter what, she's continued to show up and do the deal. And she has by far been more sponsored in her first year than I probably was in the first eight of my years. So I'm very, very proud of her for continuing to show up and do the really hard work that sometimes it takes to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. But without further ado, I'm supposed to tell you what happened and what it's like now. What happened was, and a lot of you have heard my story, I am originally from Europe. I'm originally from Poland, and my parents were political refugees fleeing communism. To kind of sum it up, because I have until, when do I have until? 8:15? Okay, 8:15, okay, just so that we kind of pay attention to how much time I have. Okay. So my parents were political refugees from Poland, which was a communist country when we were leaving. And my mom had this dream to always come to America to provide her children with freedom, a political freedom, and religious freedom, and economic freedom. And so I'm super grateful for that, because I can't imagine what my life would be like today. It wouldn't be the same. I wouldn't have the education I have. I wouldn't have the friends that I have. I wouldn't have the freedom that I have. Now, my country is very different today than it was, you know, 32 years ago or even 20 years ago. But I am so grateful for her doing that. Now, my parents did the best they could with what they had. They were young when they had us. They were wild. They were eccentric. They were artistic and emotionally volatile. And had a poor time emotionally regulating themselves. So there was a lot of transition and a lot of changes in my early childhood. By no means do I think that that caused my alcoholism. I think it most definitely exacerbated some of it, and it helped me get here a lot sooner. And I am also grateful for that, because I have spent my entire adult life sober. I got sober at 18 years old. I came in here once, and I was introduced to AA at 16, but not really willing to do the deal. But I got here at 18, I stayed. And that's because my bottom was really, really rough, which we'll get to in a little bit. But what I remember from my childhood, and there isn't a lot that I remember, because I learned the art of checking out from a very, very young age. My home was very volatile, and I never really felt like I fit in anywhere I went. I didn't feel like I fit in, you know, in schools. I was always the kid that either didn't speak German or didn't speak English. My parents were wild and nuts. They were fun on one hand and just, you know, really unpredictable on another. So I learned to check out and read people very quickly. And I did that. I alternated rapidly between that. But what I do remember prior to the age of 10 is that my checking out behavior started at a young age. And it wasn't with mind and mood altering substances. It was anything from gazing out into vacant space to stealing, cheating, and lying. And I was also a really sheltered kid. We moved around so much that I really wasn't aware what other people's homes looked like. So I didn't know that my home was chaotic. I had no idea that my, you know, family was abusive. I didn't know any of those things. And I was brought up with a God. I was brought up in the Catholic Church, even though my parents didn't go, you know, every Sunday. But we went to church on a regular basis. So when I came to the United States, when we got to the United States, we moved to New Jersey first, and we started getting some stability and normalcy, and I started establishing some friends. I realized that not everybody went to church on Sunday and beat their wife on Monday, you know, and I started getting really, really resentful, because I started comparing for the first time my life to your life. my insides to your outsides, and realizing how detached and estranged I was, how abrasive and abnormal my home was, and I started getting really, really angry. And I don't remember the exact second. I think it was probably over a fairly short period of time where I really renounced God. I really felt abandoned by God. And I know that I tried for just a brief period in my pre-adolescent years, church hopping from a Methodist church to alternative Christian churches, Lutheran church, whatever. I tried different churches, different youth groups, just kind of like the last, attempt at maybe having some sort of a relationship with a higher power. But that became replaced very quickly with mind and mood-altering substances. Now, my story is loaded with substances other than alcohol, simply because that was what was available to me. But the feelings were exactly the same. You know, when you guys get up here, those of you who are straight, just strict alcoholics, or alcohol was your choice, I had the same feeling you did the first time I ingested a mind and mood-altering substance. For the first time, I felt like I could breathe. For the first time, I felt like I could fit in. I was a very checked out and kind of numb kid. Not a whole lot fazed me, which was a protective mechanism. Thank God that I had that. But it really didn't help me fit in. Everything kind of went over my head. And I don't know if it was like a language barrier or what, but I just didn't get a whole lot. And so when I started ingesting substances for the first time, I felt like I could breathe, I could laugh with you, I could have fun. And I remember the first time that really happened for me. I was somewhere out in the middle of the woods with some of my little friends. I think I was 12 years old. And we were just laughing and having fun. And I had this thought in my head that, wow, if I feel this way doing this stuff, then maybe one day there's some hope that I'll be able to feel this way without this stuff. And I realized in that moment that time wasn't that wasn't going to happen for me right now. That I needed to continue to ingest as much of whatever I was ingesting to practice this thing called feeling or being a part of or whatever the heck I was experiencing. And so, and I did that, and that's what I did. I'd love to tell you that my drunk/drug-a-log is funny. And it's not. There's nothing funny about it. I don't have any funny bar stool stories. It was actually pretty tragic. Once I started, I never stopped. I always had something. I never went without. I made sure I never went through any withdrawals. And so I partied by myself from as young as I can remember. And if you're going to join me, cool. And if not, I didn't care. By the time I was 14, my poor mother. My mother didn't understand why my room looked the way it did. It looked like something out of a disco. I had like black lights and trip posters and glow-in-the-dark paint and glow-in-the-dark whatever lights and all sorts of things. And my mom would just come in. She's just like, I don't understand. I'm like, Mom, it's a trend. It's the fad. It's like what everybody does. She had no idea. It was just loaded every single night. And so I spent a lot of time partying by myself. So I don't have a whole lot of really funny stories around that. But it wasn't even a question in my mind, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. I never even questioned my use. It was just never a question in my mind. That was just how things were for me. I very quickly started getting into legal trouble. I managed to get decent grades in school for the most part. I also managed to become that girl very quickly that your parents didn't approve of. that was a shocker to me because I, amongst the chaos, I actually grew up with my grandparents as well. My grandparents kind of followed my mom around the world to make sure that, nothing tragic happened. And so they partially raised us, and they raised us with good morals. And I know what good morals look like. Prior to my adolescence, I was a fairly well-behaved kid for the most part. And so it was a shocker to me when, by the time I was 13 or 14, my friend's parents were like, "I don't want you hanging out with that girl." I was shocked, but that's how I had become. And I was getting into legal trouble by the time I was 15 years old. Now, my life was pretty inconsistent. We moved around a lot by the time I was in ninth grade. I had been to 13 different schools. And that really kind of fueled into and fed into my alcoholism and my addictive behavior, because everywhere I went, I could be whoever I wanted to be. You know, by the time I was 15 years old, I was a pathological liar, a klepto, you know, a complete junkie, the kid that none of your parents liked, you know, just horrible existence. And just really didn't care about a whole lot. Just completely checked out. That's such a scary place to be, you know, to feel. You know, it's so funny. We have such a hard time here in AA feeling feelings. And I got to tell you, it's much scarier to look in a mirror and feel nothing. I mean, that looking in a mirror and seeing nothing but an empty shell. And that was part of my bottom, is I remember looking in a mirror several years ahead and just looking at myself and being just this empty shell of a human being. But I had gotten into some legal trouble, and my mom remarried again, and then we moved to Hawaii. And so that was a huge change. It was 6,000 miles. I was 16 years old or 15 years old by then, and we moved. And prior to us moving, I had gotten into legal trouble, and I promised, I swore up and down to myself that I would never do this again, that I'd never steal again, that I'd never do any minor mood altering substance again, that I was done. I was sick and tired of myself. By the time I was 15 or 16, I was tired of me. And so we moved, and sure enough, it didn't last very long before I was off and running doing the exact same thing. So, you know, and within a matter of 6 months of being in Hawaii, I was actually introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was introduced to a remarkable young people's group, hundreds of young people. And one of my classmates in math class had heard about some of my shenanigans. I was bragging or what I was doing, but I was saying something. Maybe she heard some level of, like, you know, a willingness. And she said, hey, you know what, why don't you come with me to this meeting? There's a lot of young people there. You know, maybe you can get sober. And so she introduced me to AA for the first time. And I managed to pull together 56 days. But I remember walking into Kapi'olani Park. It was right outside the zoo in Honolulu. And there were just well over 100 young people of various ages. When I say young people, between, you know, 14 and like 50. And there was just a ton of sobriety there. I mean, we had people that had gotten sober at 18 but had stayed sober, and they were, you know, 40-something. And they had, you know, accumulated 25, 30 years sober. And they were still actively a part of this young people's group. So it was really nice. You had a lot of, like, a widespread of recovery there. And so I remember, I don't remember anything that was said in the meeting, but I just remember people being genuine and laughing and smiling and looking like they most definitely had something I wanted. I just didn't know what it is that they had. And I hung around for about 56 days, but I wasn't done. And I went out on a resentment. And so I take, you know, the part of the big book that says that resentments are our number one offender. Boy, is that true. Because I went out on a resentment, and a pretty silly one, too. I managed to stay 56 days sober, and I was invited to my friend's house one evening, and she was going to throw a party. She said she was going to have some friends over, and I knew who these friends were. By the way, I got sober. I got a sponsor. I didn't use my sponsor. I didn't change any of my friends, and I didn't change any of my settings, and I didn't do any of my steps. So just want to clarify that. But I managed to stay dry for 56 days and show up to meetings. And so I went to her house, and she had half a shot of tequila. I'm sorry, she had a shot of tequila in a tequila bottle, and she said to me, you know what, I have this shot of tequila, and you want to just split it? And I very quickly calculated in my head, I'm like, well, you know, I'm not really an alcoholic, I'm predominantly a drug addict. I'm like, yeah, sure. So I took half the shot. Okay, not thinking, well, I know that you know that I know that we can't get drunk on half a shot, right? But, and so that was my justification. I didn't get drunk, okay. So I didn't get drunk, and all these friends came over, and I was going to stay sober that night. I didn't want to lose my sobriety date. I was proud of coming so far and so long. So I went upstairs. I locked myself in a room. They all did whatever they did for hours. I don't even remember what the hell I did. Probably just sat there by the door listening to whatever the heck they were doing. And then when they went away, I was very proud of myself. I practiced self-control. And 3 days later, I reported to my sponsor about my courageous behavior and how I had stayed sober. And I had 50, at that point, I thought I had like 60 days sober. And she looks at me And she informed me that I had relapsed. And boy, did I get angry. I got really, really angry. I don't even remember what emotions I had, but that really pissed me off. You know, I was using all sorts of, well, but I do know, and all this other stuff, and it doesn't matter. We don't ingest mind or mood altering substances no matter what quantity. And so within a matter of days, I was off and running. You know, I used that as an excuse, and unfortunately, that resentment took me to places with people that I should nobody at my age or any age should ever end up. Just to kind of wrap up my bottom. Once again, there's nothing really cute about it or funny. I engaged in a lot of pretty serious criminal behavior with people that were twice my age, who provided me with what I wanted, and in the end, there were going to be very serious legal ramifications for my actions, and I was very fortunate that I didn't end up locked up for a long time. We had a lot of undercover cops scoping out the place, and a uniformed female police officer saved my life, actually. But I remember distinctly looking in the mirror and thinking to myself, you know, when I was 5 years old, I don't ever remember looking in the mirror and saying to myself, when I grow up, I want to be a junkie. When I grow up, I want to be a dealer, a thief, a cheat, and engage in all the things I was engaging in. And that kind of helped me, you know, get sober. But I ended up getting sober about, I think, 3 days before Halloween. Yeah, 4 days before Halloween. No, 3 days before Halloween. And I remembered that, you know, there was a wonderful place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was ready to stay sober no matter what at that point. And I went back to AA. And I detoxed on my mother's floor for 7 days. By the way, I just got to say that, you know, I put my parents through the ringer, because when I left the house at 16, they didn't know where I was for 2 years. And we lived on an island. Okay, we lived on an island in Honolulu, in Hawaii, Oahu. Okay, they didn't know where their daughter was. They didn't know if I was alive or dead. I managed to evade them and the law long enough. And so I finally turned up, and they were kind enough to take me back into their home and allow me to detox and stay sober there, and I lived there for the first year. And I needed to earn their trust. I needed to learn how to be a daughter and a decent human being, and you know, go get a job and go back to school. And so I did those things. I got a home group. I got a sponsor, which I called by name for a long time, not recommended. Didn't work my steps for a long time, but just threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, in regards to like service work and just showing up to meetings and hanging out with young people. And who knows, maybe I was just constitutionally incapable or, you know, rum dumb or whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the hell my problem was. I'm not going to try and go back and figure it out. It's not recommended, but I just showed up and did the best that I could with what I had at the time, and I'm surprised that I stayed sober for 5 years without working my steps, and that's kind of how it went for the first 5 years of my recovery. I went to meetings consistently, and I had service work consistently, and I hung out with friends consistently, but I didn't do any of my steps. I did I did the 1 through 5 tango repeatedly, and I kept switching sponsors, and for whatever reason, I wasn't willing to turn over my character defects because I kept quitting before 6 and 7. I was still indulging in those, apparently. And life got good. You know, when we stay sober and Alcoholics Anonymous and stop cheating, stealing, and lying, life gets better. I mean, it just does. You know, as the layers of the onion come off and you start to be more and more with you, you start to be less and less okay with, you know, the things that you're doing if you're not living a sober life. And I was living a dry life for a really, really long time. And I had accumulated a lot of things, and I was successful financially, and I had accumulated some degrees at that point and had a nice home and car and stuff. And by the time I was 5 years sober, I had nobody to share that with, because I pretty much managed to cut everybody out of my life, and nobody wanted to be around me, and I didn't want to be around you. And it was very, very, very painful, you know, when I had graduated from college and was proud of myself, and I had, like, no friends to share that with. So I was in a lot of pain at that point, and thinking of using more than ever. And so I went and got a sponsor, and I started working the steps, and I really got into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, here's the thing about that. You know, not working my steps, I isolated myself from you because I had nothing to give, okay? Without working my steps, without working the principles, the spiritual principles, I had nothing to offer. And I knew I had nothing to offer, and I had nothing to share about. So I was mute for the first 5 years of being sober. Can you imagine how painful and uncomfortable that is? What a horrible, miserable existence. I mean, talk about my level of pain tolerance or something, but what a miserable, dry existence. I rarely shared. I was never asked to speak, you know, and I really didn't feel like I had anything to contribute because I didn't have anything to contribute, you know, other than plowing through life to get my way. And so for the first time, once I finished my steps, I felt like I could fit in. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I had something to offer. I felt like a human amongst human beings. I could breathe. I could share. I started developing social skills. and shortly thereafter, once I completed my steps, I was about 6 years sober. 6 years sober? Yeah, six or almost 7 years sober. I moved back to Florida. I actually moved to Tampa, and I joined this group when it was in the other church, and this was my home group for a while, and it was much smaller back then. And it's nice to see that it's grown, even though there's some usual suspects missing tonight. I can see their seats are empty, but they must be doing something. But I joined the home group, and I participated in all the activities, and I had fun, and I started sponsoring people and being really a part of. And life continued to get better. And I'd like to tell you that life has been really, really good, but it hasn't all been peaches and cream. It's been rocky in my recovery. You know, I had a real rough period right around 9 years sober, you know, where, it was a rough period, let's put it this way. And, you know, I don't know if enough of layers of the onion had been peeled back or what, but I got to tell you that through my spiritual practice of meditation and prayer, I learned how to be kind and compassionate to myself during the rough times and not expect myself to be someplace other than where I'm at. Because unless I accept where I'm at, I can't get to where I want to go. I can't honestly do what I need to do if I'm constantly BSing myself and you. And my spiritual practice taught me to have some kindness and compassion and acceptance and just be with what is and not try and control it and manipulate it. And so that was one of the largest lessons that I learned at 9 years sober. I also got a sponsor when I first moved here. She's still my sponsor. It's the longest running female relationship that I've had and a successful one. She has taught me how to be a dignified woman in Alcoholics Anonymous and have compassion for myself and others. And I'm so grateful for her. You know, there's so many lessons she has taught me. You know, one thing that I love about my sponsorship family, and my sponsor says this all the time, we're not in the business of hiring or firing anybody. We don't fire sponsees. We don't fire sponsors. It's very egotistical. We're not in that business. And we don't run. We stay put, and we work through those relationships. And provided that the person that is sponsoring us or whatever, that they're not abusive, we learn to work through that. That's taught me a lot. There's many times where I didn't want to call her, and I didn't call her, and I didn't like what she had to say, or I didn't like this, or I didn't like that. But I got to learn to work through that and talk to her about it and learn how to show up differently, and she learned how to show up differently. And there's just something remarkable about staying with the same person for a long period of time. Who knows your cycles, who knows your behavior, who can call you out on it? Okay, and that's just been a tremendous lesson for me, because I'm a runner. And I don't like something, I'm out, peace out. And so that's most definitely been a huge lesson for me over the last 8 years. The other thing is that I've learned is to have good relationships with you. You are, and I always say this, you are my direct measuring stick between my relationship between me and God. How I measure my relationship with my higher power, with what my relationship is like with you. If I don't like you, if I'm judging you, it's because I don't like me, and I'm judging me, and I'm not connected to my higher power. I'm not working the steps. I'm not doing the spiritual program. I'm not working, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And so it is important to me that I maintain a healthy and loving relationship with people around me. I've learned how to suit up and show up and continue to plug away in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have gotten some wonderful gifts from getting sober young and staying sober. And continuing to show up even when it's hard. I have a wonderful education that I've been working at very hard forever. Hopefully it's coming to an end in a year. So if God willing, and there's most definitely been some interesting things going on over the last week or so. I love the saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans, because this past week has been very interesting. But if God willing, I'm supposed to finish, hopefully by June, I'll have my doctorate degree, and all I'll have to do is just finish my dissertation, so I'll be ABD, which is great. I also had plans and designs for my life about what I was going to be when I grew up, and I dedicated a lot of time to that particular profession and education, and came to find out that that's not where I was supposed to be, and that was a very painful experience for me, because I needed to quit what I had been doing for 5 years, and I was working on my doctorate in clinical psychology and dedicated 5 years. Come to find out that that's not what I was supposed to be. And so I needed to take a year off and had a mini existential crisis and a breakdown. I think it was right around 9. And reevaluate my life and surrender and completely surrender to the rest of whatever I was not surrendering to God. I was still holding on to stuff. And until I let go, it was just self-sabotage. So after about a year, I re-enrolled, and I'm now completing my doctorate in education. And I have a phenomenal career that allows me a lot of flexibility, is very stimulating, allows me to help others. And I credit that to Alcoholics Anonymous and being sober, and it would have never been possible had I not had a relationship with my higher power. The other thing I want to mention that is really important to me is my relationship with my family. I blamed my family for a really, really long time. I played a victim for a really, really, really long time. About, my trauma, about this, about that, about what I can't and what I can, why I'm doing what I'm doing. I gotta tell you, it was a miserable existence, Today I realized that my parents did the best they could with what they had, and they were only trying to give me, to give me what they didn't have. In a funny way, in a weird way, but and they weren't very skillful at it sometimes. But I am grateful for all of my experiences because it's made me who I am today. Today I am very proud of where I'm at and how far I've come. And I like myself. I wake up in the morning liking myself. I don't spend nearly as much time comparing my insides to your outsides. I'm very hopeful about the future. I'm very excited about what the future has to bring for me. Sky's the limit. I have a zeal and passion for life and education and making the best out of myself. And all that came from all my trials and tribulations, from all those difficult times, because that taught me that no matter what I can, and that it's going to be okay, and that God shows up no matter what. If I choose to seek him, he's always there by my side. Those are all, I would have never learned any of those lessons had I been handed everything down and my childhood was peachy. For whatever reason, my journey is my journey, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And my relationship with my parents is remarkable today. I don't know who my biological father is, but I love the man my mom married, or remarried, and I have a wonderful relationship with them. They're like my friends, and it's wonderful to watch my mom be happy and be in a healthy relationship. I also have a wonderful relationship with my sister. So You know, there's so many gifts that have come out of being sober. I couldn't even sit here and tell you all of them. But without further ado, thank you so much. I am once again very proud of Lisa and very honored. It is truly an honor and a privilege to sponsor women in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I can stay accountable to my sponsor, but the people who I truly stay accountable to are my sponsees. Okay, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you so much.